Continuing to preview the big matchup Friday night at the Palestra, Penn and Princeton to open up Ivy League play for the Tigers and the Quakers, one of the bigger rivalries here in the Ancient Eight, that's for sure. And to give us the perspective from the Quakers side, happy to have on the expert hotline Coach Ira Bowman joining us. He's an assistant coach for Penn. Ira, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Happy 2018. And did you do anything fun for the new year?
I did not. We did a little bit of recruiting on New Year's Day.
Silly question.
That, nothing too exciting.
Yeah, that was a silly question, Coach. I should have known. If you have any downtime, you're recruiting. Jill has taught me that here in the last 3 years. But, Coach, I would say a pretty successful non-conference slate for your crew so far, 9-5 to complete the non-conference swing. And just talk a little bit about the non-conference play and what you've seen from your crew.
Yeah, I think at this point in the season, we're pretty happy with where we are. I think for Brett, when you're coaching, you're always trying to get better each day. And us in the Ivy League, it's always been a little bit different because you until last year, there was no Ivy League tournament. So you were going into the conference play, you know, basically playing a 14-game tournament. Every game meant so much. Not that this game doesn't mean as much now that there's an Ivy League tournament, but for the most part, the preseason games were to get you ready for these matchups that we're about to start. You know, being in the Ivy League, it's the smallest league in the country, so we only have eight teams in the league. So it's not like a lot of the other power conferences, and we kind of get spread out by only playing them on Friday, Saturday. So it's a little different where you, after the holidays or after the new year, the first part of your season is over, and then you're kind of building up toward those conference games. So for us, in the position that we've, you know, played a lot of young guys the past 2 years and having them to get some experience, it's, you know, we're in a good spot, I feel like, you know, going headed into this first matchup.
Ira, looking at non-conference, you have a few notable wins, and one that sticks out is the 4-overtime game versus Monmouth. Can you tell us about that?
Jill, it was one of the more unique games I've ever been a part of as a player or a coach.
Well, let's just say we're happy that you came out on the winning side of that.
No doubt. You and I both are happy we came out on the winning side. Just obviously to go, we had a double overtime game before, you know, earlier this year as well versus LaSalle, and then you have a game where you go into 4 overtimes. Just I think our guys show, you know, a grittiness and some mental fortitude. I think you go from having a game won to really thinking it's lost to having it won again to, oh, I might lose, and to have, you know, guys that, you know, not really used to being in position or playing a lot, being in position to help you win. It's just, it showed growth from a lot of guys who don't normally play. Now, we had one of my main guys, Ryan Belly, who played 55 minutes. I don't know if any of any college
that's
players
gonna be some
55
record.
Minutes in, yeah, 55 minutes in a college game. But we also had, you know, some freshmen make big plays. We had guys that hadn't played all year make big plays. So it was, you know, pretty ecstatic to come out with the win. But it was a great college environment against a team that's been really successful over the past 3 years in that league. So just, you know, anytime you get a win like that and on the road, it just does well for the mental makeup of a lot of the guys on the team. The team as a whole and a lot of the young guys as well.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are definitely road tested, which is only going to benefit you coming into the Ivy play. And another win I would love to just have you talk about is winning at Dayton. Talk about, I mean, just the environment there and being able to walk away with a W.
Oh, man. That also was another great college basketball game. I had never been to Dayton or played or coached a game at Dayton, but obviously it's a site for the NCAA tournament every year, that play-in game. And you go there and you see why the facilities are great. You know, it's 14,000. And, you know, those fans really go out and support their community and that team. Just for our guys, it was a great experience for them to be in that building and play against a good team. Like, we, you know, competition-wise, that's who we usually play. Like, we play that level of team every year, being in the Big Five. Like, we don't really play a lot of, like, not good teams. So it was a good experience, and obviously for us to come out with the win and have, again, another guy who doesn't play a lot, have a big part of winning that game, and, you know, have a kid like Antonio Woods who was out last year and come back and be able, a kid, he was from Ohio, go home and play well. Just a lot of good things to come out of that game.
Ira Bowman joining us here on the podcast. And Coach, looking at your background, you've played professional basketball, not just overseas, but you were on a couple of NBA rosters as well, including two stints with the Philadelphia 76ers. What was that like playing on the Sixers during their run? Larry Brown, the head coach, of course, Allen Iverson, number three, was tearing up the NBA. What was that experience like to go to the NBA and to play for the Sixers?
Well, Barry, it's the pinnacle of any basketball player's dreams and goals. I was so fortunate. The biggest thing with me, I always try to share my experience with guys that obviously haven't played at Penn and being able to be back here coaching, just to talk to the kids about, you know, playing at the highest level, but just enjoying every moment that you're in and embracing it. I think I was very fortunate to be in position, you know, and I played on some great teams, had great teammates, and they helped me put myself in position to be successful. And I was fortunate, like I said, to play in the NBA and play for great coaches. And it was a lifelong dream come true. And again, I'm forever grateful for it, and it was the experience of a lifetime. I know playing in those days, obviously Allen Iverson was really good and one of the best players in the league, and just watching and being a part of that, practicing against him every day and seeing the whole obstacle that goes along with that when we went on the road, how people reacted to him, it was just a unique thing, and again, something that I'll be forever endeared to.
Well, I am a huge Sixers fan and a huge Allen Iverson fan. My next question is, do you trust the process?
We're forced to trust the process, and I do. I think that, you know, you had a vision, and, like, you know, I guess Philadelphia sports had been down for a little while, and he felt like this was the way to go about it. And obviously the Sixers ownership group was dominated by, you know, a bunch of Penn grads, so, you know, I'm in a position where I better trust the process. But again, being in Philadelphia and being a Sixers alum, I know it was a rough time, and for people to kind of understand it. And for me, as a player, you always endure. Your mindset is to go out and compete and try to win in every opportunity. And sometimes you sit back and look at the ownership group as a fan. You're like, how can you not be trying to win a championship every year? So that's always a, mm-hmm. you know, a sticky subject, and depends on where you are on the fan poll. Like, are you a young fan where you got plenty of seasons left to cheer? Or are you a fan that's been drugged through the mud hole for a while? Or are you a fan in your waning years and you don't have these years to give up? So it kind of depends on your perspective as a whole, but it's hard, I think, as a player and, you know, being directly connected to it, where you think that they can't possibly not be trying to win, and to have, you know, obviously, and it's an inexact science with the draft, and you figure you're not, even if you lose, there's no guarantee you're going to get great players, but, you know, you got to be pretty excited with, you know, obviously Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid now, and just now it's just a matter of obviously building it. So I'm a Sixers fan as well. I'm excited about their process, and hopefully, you know, they're starting to turn the corner as well.
Ira, as you've gone through your coaching career, and as we just mentioned, you played for Larry Brown, the legendary head coach for the 76ers, Hall of Famer, of course. And then you played for another good college coach, and unfortunately didn't have the same success as Larry Brown, but Lon Kruger, when you were with the Atlanta Hawks as well. I mean, you were able to play for two Hall of Fame coaches. Were you able to? Do you still take some of the lessons and some of the things you learned while as a player to today from those two coaches?
No doubt. I think you talk about Larry Brown, and everybody realizes one of the, you know, only guys to win at the college level and at the NBA level. But just like, it's lifelong lessons and respecting the game. And that's the same thing for Coach Lon Kruger. Just always respecting the game and treating every opportunity as if it would be your last, like never taking anything for granted. Developing relationships with your teammates. Those are things that not a lot of pro coaches kind of like to harp on, but those are two things that those guys continued to harp on. And I'm in, you know, obviously still in contact with those guys today, and the relationships that they built with myself and other players are relationships that I long for as a coach. So, again, I can't put into words how grateful I am for the opportunities that were presented to me, and I would hope that, you know, I'm doing the same thing that they did to me and paying it forward to another group of young men.
Ira, I want to kind of shift the conversation to looking forward to this game versus Princeton. And I'm sure just, you know, the last game that you had took them into overtime, that first round of the Ivy tournament. I'm sure you're licking your chops to get them again. Can you talk about the mindset of the staff and the team heading into the game?
Yeah, sure, Joe. I think, like, obviously when you come off of the last game of last season and you think about how it culminated, there were so many highs and lows of last season. And I think, like, we had a young group of guys playing at the end of the season that hadn't played at the beginning of the season. And I think, again, you talk about the four overtime game versus Monmouth this year, but that Princeton playoff game was a unique game in itself. In this series, there have been a lot of weird games, a lot of strange things have happened, but I don't think there had ever been a game where basically one team leads from start to finish. Like, you basically don't trail the whole game, and then you lose it in overtime after, you know, missing a free throw, which would have iced the game, and two other plays that could have iced the game to go down to have them get a tip in and send it into overtime. It was such a unique game that, you know, the guys that were a part of that game, I know, I'm sure, feel the angst and anxiety from the, you know, having to walk off the court or lose of that game. But like everything, every game is its own entity, and like this group is a different group. That group that Princeton had, what a great season they had last year, going undefeated in the league, winning the first Ivy League tournament. So, and they had, you know, a couple of guys that like refused to allow them to lose. And I think that obviously they had the player of the year, a young man by the name of Spencer Weiss, who is a Seton Hall Prep grad where I went to high school. So I had an affinity for him. And like Stephen Cook, they just had great players who were willing to sacrifice everything to win. And they returned that core group of guys, that would, you know, the talented bunch of them with, you know, Miles Stevens and Devin Kennedy and Amir Bell. So it's going to be a huge challenge, and I think our guys are looking forward to it. But I think, like, for us, I think as a coach, you do them a disservice when you continue to harp on, you know, what happened last year. I think, like I said, this is a new group, a new challenge, and I know our guys are excited about it, and I'm hoping that they're, you know, they come out and play as well as they want to play.
Coach, you look at the numbers from your team, highest scoring team in the Ivy League, but also second best defense. You have the second best field goal percentage defensively in the league. So you're doing it on both sides of the basketball. And to have that sort of success early on, I mean, you need guys to buy in. And it seems like you've got the guys that are buying in so far, and you've seen it through non-conference play.
Yeah, we've been fortunate up to this point. Like I said, we've gotten it from a lot of different places, and that's the beauty of being, you know, at Penn and having a team that we have. Like, I think we have a range of guys that average almost double figures, and from 8 points to 14 points. So it's no one guy that's getting it done. And I think that, you know, you talk about the 9 wins up to this point, I can name 5 guys that don't start and don't play a lot of minutes that have had an effect in those 9 wins. So that's when you have successful teams, that's what usually happens. And I think, like, obviously you just look at the Princeton team from last year, where they had guys up and down the rosters who at different times in their season had a dramatic effect on the outcome of those games. And like I said, as a college athlete, those are the things you look for. I think that the most successful teams are the teams that have guys that sacrifice and guys that are willing to be ready when their number is called. So, like I said, as we enter into this 14-game tournament, and the first game being tomorrow night, I'm excited for the main guys that have been getting things done for a little bit of time, but I'm also excited for one of the guys off the bench who may come in that hasn't had an effect on a game, that does something big that hopefully puts us over the hump.
Coach, before we let you go, would you be able to identify kind of what are the 3 keys to tomorrow's game to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of keys. If I had to kind of put it into words exactly in basketball terms, it's easy to say we got to score one more point than they do. But the statistics don't always tell the whole story. Like I said, they have a core group of guys that have been playing a lot, and I think that the easy thing is to say, obviously, Devin Candy is an electric scorer. Obviously, Amir Bell's a dynamic big guard. And obviously, Miles Stevens is the defensive player of the year and one of the best offensive players in the league. So if you start talking about defensive and offensive cues, defensively, you want to make those three guys have to work to score or to get their baskets or their points without putting them on a foul line. You want to limit them to one shot, and you don't want to allow them to get a lot of catch-and-shoot three-point opportunities. So their young guys have been playing well. The two, obviously, Sebastian Munch and Ryan Schweiger and Jerome DeRozier are three guys that are freshmen that have been plugged in to play minutes where they had two other seniors who were very good and very disciplined and refused to – did all the little things that helped them win a lot of their close games last year. So – and, you know, to sum it all up is to make those three guys work really hard for what they get and to limit those younger guys to have an effect on the game while at the end just for us playing for each other, having fun, and sharing the ball.
Ira Bowman, we appreciate your insight here. We could do like a whole nother segment on your time with the Sixers. I feel like we could do like a whole nother segment, and I'd be fascinated on everything by it.
It'd be so many stories I could tell you that actually they're friendly enough to put on air. And there's
right.
So many that I wouldn't be able to tell
off
you
air,
just about the practice section. I mean, and nothing bad. Just
yeah.
Like, you know, I play obviously Dikembe Mutombo and Tony Kukoc, just the personalities that existed along with Coach Brown in that locker room. Just like it was a unique setting, and I was excited to be a part of it. And I know obviously they went on that following year to go all the way to the NBA Finals, and you can kind of see it brewing just because they had, similar to what we're looking for at Penn, just guys willing to give themselves up, willing to, you know, it wasn't about what could the team do for me, it was what I could do for the team. So it was a special experience, and again, I'm hoping to emulate that soon on the college level.
I would imagine, though, Ira, AI might have enjoyed practice a little bit. Just a little?
That's an overbite that I always hear. And, like, I always tell people, it wasn't that he didn't like to practice. So that soundbite got caught because he liked to practice because he wanted to practice. He wanted to scrimmage in practice. He didn't like the monotony of, you know, the drills and going
warming
through
up.
What we had to do. But if you wanted to play up and down, he was all for it, especially any, like, up pickup inside practice. So
you know what?
It wasn't as bad as people think it was.
He didn't need to practice. He was that damn good. That's for sure. Ira Bowman, the assistant coach for Penn Men's Basketball. Best of luck against Princeton. We always appreciate the time.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
All right.